Hi, Giles. This is Thane Maynard.
For you, sir.
So tell us a bit about this. I know you really address the issue that not only, okay, our climate's changing, but with that, so will the habitability of many of the big cities that we have here in the lower 48.
I guess it's already changed for animals. You know, songbirds have been migrating further northwards for about 10, 20 years now. But throughout the Southwest, especially in California this year, there's the worst drought on record, the worst drought that they can find any record of, including geological record. And as the Southwest dries up, there's going to be less and less carrying capacity, less and less water for the people that are now there, and they're going to have to move. On the East Coast, there are going to be increasing superstorms and sea level rise. That's the most populated area in the United States. People in those cities are going to have to move. And then in the Midwest, there's riverine flooding because, the snowpack isn't staying on the ground in the spring. It's just melting and rushing down, established river valleys. And so those people are going to have to relocate as well.
And one of your beliefs, given that it is getting warmer in the South, is that people will move further north to Canada, even northern Canada.
Yeah, I think actually that's already happening. We've got, I don't know if it's, a climate migration yet, but we have more Americans in Canada than we've had at any time since the Vietnam War. There's a million Americans here now, which is 1/35th of our total population. And this is up in recent years. During the Dust Bowl, you had 2.5 million people who left the Great Plains for California and other points. I think it's going to be something on that size.
Absolutely. I think that people are experiencing not so much just the global warming, as it's sometimes called, but certainly extremely erratic weather.
Yeah. And I guess that's why, a lot of Americans and a lot of Canadians are sort of scratching their heads saying, something really is happening here, and it's not really accounted for in the news or scientific reports. Maybe we have to consider other options.
So one of the things you talk about is that urban areas, where, of course, most of us live, certainly in the lower 48, most folks do, urban areas are probably the most drastically affected due to sort of the sort of urban heat, as you put it.
And the density of population. But yeah, the heat waves, are going to increase in intensity, over the next 20 to 30 years and become sort of 2 or 3 month events that make it really unbearable. And as the, as increasing droughts draw down the water of big cities, it's going to be less easy to stay in them all year round.
Now, naturally, one of the questions this begs is, are the Canadians prepared for the fact that somewhere between 2 and 100 million Americans want to come up or get your water or get your resources or move there?
No, not a bit. We haven't had this conversation yet. People are just starting to talk about it now. And the kind of knee-jerk reaction that I get when I talk about these things in public is, well, how do we stop them? But I don't think, you guys, you have 350 million people there, in excess of 350 million people. We have 35 million here. I don't think there's any way that we can put a stop to it. I think it's just it's a natural occurrence when things get bad in one region, people move to another region. And they do it before they get really bad. They do it when, the quality of life is perceptibly better elsewhere.
And as they say, at least you have good beer and free health care in Canada.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll have free health care for everyone because, if we get an extra million people, it's just going to crack our infrastructure. So what we need to do is we need to sit down and start planning this now, start having a conversation, an international conversation about this. What are we going to do?
Famously, the U.S. Congress gets itself into a gridlock where people sort of choose sides and may not want to get to a compromise, which has become kind of a dirty word. How does that work in the Canadian Parliament when you bring up these issues that are obviously vital to the future of your nation? Do they listen to one another?
No, I don't think we have, a majority government that's sort of right-leaning right now, and they seem not to believe in climate change. That's their, their sort of stated position. So they of course, can't act on it if they don't believe in it. They don't believe in it because they're, supporting big oil, especially like Chinese pipelines and things like that. So if they suddenly start acting on the fact of climate change, they're being kind of hypocritical, and people will call them on it. So there may well be a change of government in 2015, but I don't think anything will happen before that.
I think of David Suzuki, who's one of the most famous scientists in Canada, and he certainly must have weighed in on this topic. Are there folks that listen to someone such as David?
Every Canadian listens to David Suzuki. Some people listen to him and roll their eyes, and some people listen to him and think that, you know, whatever he says is the gospel truth. And I know the man, and I fall somewhere in between. I think he's, you know, he's a great environmentalist and a good scientist. What he told me was that, you know, nobody looks this far ahead, and so there are no plans in place in Canada for it. In the United States, the NSA and the CIA have been studying these issues for years. I guess because the migration from Mexico since the 1980s, you can see the problem a lot more clearly in the United States and imagine that it might happen from the United States into Canada. It's sort of like the toothpaste is being squeezed through North America's tube, and it's reached the middle now. And as climate change keeps squeezing it, it'll eventually all come out in the north.
This is fascinating. Give us a few more insights that you had in your book. I know it was very thoroughly researched, by the way, so an excellent book.
You.
But some of the conclusions you draw are different than the typical things you might just read in a news story about climate.
You know, the main point is really the expense of the extreme weather events that are happening with greater and greater frequency. So the more Superstorm Sandys there are, the more sort of Texas and California droughts there are, the more riverine flooding like this fall's riverine flooding in Colorado that cost $2 billion, that's going to draw down the economy at a point when the economy is really weak. And you're not going to be able to repair the infrastructure indefinitely, you know, one, two, three, four times. But then it starts to get very expensive. I think it was $80 billion in repairs spread over 2 years for Superstorm Sandy. You know, if that happens two or three times, you know, you've got a big mortgage on the future. So it may pay to do what they did in Galveston back in the 19th century and just move the whole thing. And incidentally, that's what they're doing in Alaska now. There's a whole bunch of, small towns like Kivalina that are being moved inland about 100 miles.
Mm-hmm.
By the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
And this sort of change certainly affects many industries, but also famous industries that are Canadian, management of your forestry and the management of your fisheries are drastically affected.
It's hard to find salmon, you know, off the coast of British Columbia now. It's all sort of moving northwards. With the cooler oceans and our lobsters have moved out of, Maine and Nova Scotia and are now on the coast of Labrador. And because our boreal forest is warmer, we've got mountain pine beetles and the lodgepole pine killing the forest. And then, of course, in the hot summer, you know, the lightning strikes them and they just act as tinder and burn forever in these huge fires that are unlike anything we've ever seen before, you know, and we can't put them out because they're just too big and too far away.
They are indeed.
It's really not a pretty picture.
Well, as I said, your book is challenging, but therefore good for people to read, be aware of, and enter into a bigger discourse. So, Giles Slade, thank you for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you, Thane. I appreciate you having me.
And I understand you're going to sail across the Pacific in a sailboat.
My wife and I are going to sail to Hawaii as soon as our boy is old enough. We've got a young 9-year-old.
That's great. We'll have fun with that, and I look forward to your next book.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
My guest has been Giles Slade, author of the new book, American Exodus, Climate Change and the Coming Flight for Survival. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.